Okay, babe, another episode.
Hey,
here we
babe.
Go again.
Yes.
And the people are complaining.
It's about time, I know. The last time was towards the end of 2024. We did one around muscle. That was super fun.
Muscle Deciphered.
I love that one.
But you know what I love about that episode is that it had so much inside of that. If some of you are listening now, go listen back.
Yeah.
I mean, I've forwarded that to people. People have listened to that after a while, gone back to it, because you talk about so much in that. And I think our episodes are rather lengthy, so people have to kind of listen to it.
Do it in bite-sized chunks.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's
the
intention.
Okay.
That is the intention. I mean, just the other day, I was recording like a TV episode, and I remember why it was so frustrating. Because we did a lot of shooting and we only used, I think, like 3 minutes of the entire shoots, which is a few hours long. And so much was left out because that's what TV is. It's visual. It's bite-sized. You've got to grab people's attention. It's sometimes a lot of the fluff. And it's all like just, it's for TV. You know, it's so true. And it's frustrating because you never really get into the meat of anything, into the detail, which is what these podcasts are about. That's what I love. Like, don't worry about the timer. If clients or people listening have to do it in three chunks, so be it.
Yeah.
At least we're getting really to the bottom of something and not holding back.
And we're doing it in a way that's informal, in a way that's, like, my role on this podcast is really just to ask the dumb questions, because all the stuff that you guys speak about, I really don't understand. And today's topic is an interesting one.
You like to play dumb though, babe, but you're so naughty.
Yeah, but today's topic.
You read more than Carly and I added together times 10.
Okay, now you've mentioned Carly, so now we have to bring it in. Okay, so Carly's here, guys. So we've got a special guest today. And Carly was on the last one where we spoke about Plenty and the launch of Plenty and the Plenty products. And she chimed in there. But this is the first time you're on the podcast as a guest. So welcome.
Yeah, guys.
Big welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So for those of you that don't know Carly, Carly is our dietitian on staff and she's part of the team. She's been with us for several years and it's the person that we turn to personally. We turn to with clients and it's the person that when you go to lisaradio.com, you click on wellness. Underneath there, you can do consultations with Carly. There's that 15-minute pre-consult. She does DNA testing. I call her the DNA whisperer. And because you are, I think the way you decipher people's DNA, because people go do these DNA tests, they get these encyclopedic things that come back at them,
and then
they don't know what to do. And what I love what you do is you actually take that and you sit down with them, like you did with me, like you did with Lisa and everyone else, and you decipher everything. And
well, in layman's terms, I think as well, like real scenarios.
Try and make it relatable to their lives as well as important.
Because you're like super smart and half the things you say, people are like, huh? Can you speak English?
Yeah.
You know, so it's really cool the way that you bring in like real lifestyle situations.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Anyway, she's not going to be able to leave the room here. Her head's going to be so big.
No, but I think it's a very important point because I think people need to understand who Carly is, number one. I think number two is I want to make sure that you do all the necessary disclaimer stuff here. So, you know, this is not
medical advice.
Medical advice and check with your doctor and all.
100%.
We want to do all of that. That's, you know, a lot of this is Carly's opinion and we'll probably.
Well, not opinion, but I think it's what I've seen in practice.
There
and it's just doesn't replace advice from your doctor or your dietitian. It's educational and informative, but don't use it to replace the advice of someone who knows your body and who's looked at your blood tests.
There you go.
Yeah,
and also, I think it's the way we're going to end this podcast, because no matter what topic we speak about, I find that I always tell everyone through Lisa's client base, the ultimate thing is go check your DNA.
Mm.
Go find out who you are genetically. And once you've kind of unpacked that, looked at that, then you can make the necessary lifestyle changes that ultimately lead to a solution that's unique to who you are. So like data beats opinion.
Mm.
It's not going out and saying, oh, I've got this particular symptom or what you're talking about that, like, I feel that, I've got that, and then run off to my doctor to go buy the supplement or do that. I feel at the end of the day, everything comes back to understand yourself genetically.
As a first step, for sure. Yeah.
And then when you've got that DNA information and you've done the consultation with Carly, then you can go off and make those changes that are uniquely for you. I think so few people, I see this all the time, doctors get on podcasts and they speak about things. We went to something, a wellness weekend, Lisa and I, just the other day, and we listened to somebody that was a dietitian and we listened to a doctor. And like at the end of the day, they're giving all this information, but people walk away without the tools that are uniquely for them. Like, okay, can I eat like that?
Yeah. Well, it's generic. It's a bit of a script. So it's holistic and it's definitely great advice, you know, especially when you're talking about the Mediterranean eating plan. There's lots of science. It's around calories and creating deficits and about educating people about how much protein should you be eating in a day. And it's so average. Important. You know what I mean? It's generalized.
Yeah.
But if you really want to see results and you really want to know that you've got, there's no self-doubt. You're never going to doubt yourself. You know, you're supplementing appropriately and you're eating according to what your body needs and you're training the right way and everything is just so bespoke. It takes that guesswork away and that sort of doubt. Like, I wonder if I could be doing better. Well, I wonder if I'm actually taking the right supplements, wrong supplements. Maybe I'll just add that to my list of supplements I take every month and you're on your 7,000 rands worth of supplements every month because you just think, what if I need it too? So it, for me, it just gives you complete peace of mind when it comes to all things health. And I mean, the world is so busy. Life is so hectic. One thing we don't want to have to also worry about is like our health. You know, we want that to just be something that's almost like a given, something that you don't take for granted, but something that's just there. Yeah. And it's propelling your life forward. It gives you that vitality to be able to go and do all the things in your life that you want to do. And you're not also worrying about health every day. Mm-hmm. That is a big stressor. And whenever I'm not well, it consumes my life, you know, and then I'm so grateful when I get better. I want to exercise, I want to do everything again.
We do take it for granted,
but it's not something I want to think about every day. It's something that I just want to know I'm doing everything that I can. And if I get flu and if I get a this or that, well, you know what? I did everything best I knew how.
And so many people do stress about their health. I mean, I see it every day. If we ask what are the reasons that you are stressed, they're worrying about their health or a certain condition or their weight, or it is a constant nag. So how lucky you are if that isn't a worry.
And I think lots of people ignore it because they don't want to get worried by it. But they ignore it, so they move it aside. And then when it becomes the issue, then everything starts clicking in. You know, Anyway,
and you become a little paranoid as well. Like, you even get scared to go away and not have, like, all your absolute perfect foods in front of you. You know, because you're so neurotic because you think you know it, like, this is what you should eat every day and there's no other way. But once you have the data, you can be a lot more flexible. You know what I mean? Because you just understand yourself 100% fully. Like, Steph and I can go away. It doesn't matter where we are. And I will make a plan because I'm so empowered.
But you know how to listen to your body also, which is so important.
And I know how to tweak things. And like, I know what I need to be eating. So, yeah, for me, it's just such an empowering thing to never have to worry about where I am. And is there going to be a gym? Is there going to be food for me? What's the sleeping environment going to be like?
You can work around it.
Yeah, just little hacks that make the world of difference. I'd never worry about it now. I can travel anywhere in the world. I used to be a bit of a pain.
But how much freedom is that?
Yeah, but you know what I mean, babe? Like, everything just had to be perfect because it's like I didn't quite understand my body.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, we had the hotel, anything. Let's not go into that. But so let's get to the topic today.
Yeah.
I think the topic's quite interesting today. It's one that I don't understand. I hear you guys talk about it. And this podcast that I'm on, I didn't do a lot of research because I didn't want to come prepared. I want someone listening to this and this particular topic to hear it like I'm hearing it. Because I think 99% of people out there don't do what you two do all day, every day. They're busy. They're bankers. They're candlestick makers. They do what they do.
Wow.
And I think this topic is pivotal because it's such an important topic. And it's coming up more and more and more. And that's cortisol.
Yes.
So I don't understand cortisol. So I'm going to ask, like, which one of you are going to deal with this? Like, what the hell is this
from
thing?
From a medical perspective, I think Carly can maybe unpack it. In a nutshell, it's pretty much the stress hormone that a lot of people have heard about. They might have even had their cortisol levels tested, checked before, but they don't really know what it means. They just know that too much is bad. Too much makes you fat.
I mean, that's already a lot of knowledge for, I think, most people.
But wait. So cortisol, it's a hormone. Let's just step into that first. So it's a hormone, right?
And catecholamine is the group of hormones that it belongs to. So stress hormone.
Okay, so it's a stress hormone. Mm-hmm. Don't go there so quickly.
It's part of the adrenaline family.
Baby steps.
Okay.
Yeah, cortisol and adrenaline are two different hormones, yes. but they're secreted from the same place, which is the adrenal gland
yeah.
that sits on top of your kidney. So they're two tiny little triangular shaped glands
right.
And they sit on top of your kidneys, and they're responsible for releasing cortisol and adrenaline and noradrenaline. In the States, they call it epinephrine. But okay. same thing as adrenaline.
So they secrete a substance, and the substance yes. is a hormone, and this
the gland hormone, makes the hormone.
Hormone, and this hormone does what?
So it's primarily driving the fight or flight response. You can call it fight or flight, fight or fright, fight or freeze. There's lots of different words, but essentially what it is it stimulates your sympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system is the one arm, and then the other side is the parasympathetic, which is known as rest and digest. So cortisol triggers the body to move into that fight or flight or that sympathetic nervous system state.
Okay, so in that state... So when you say like flight, fright,
mm-hmm.
the other
fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Or fawn. We're going to get to that.
Yeah,
now.
We'll unpack that a little bit, because what is that?
So these things, these words we use are the things that we experience when we feel stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And stress can happen in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So stress can be like high impact stress. Let's just call it that. It's very like a situation, financial.
Traumatic.
Something happened to your child. That's an instance of stress. But stress seems to have different formations and almost like so many, perpetual.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a consistent stress.
Well,
thing going
so
on.
Let's talk about that. Because I think a lot of people think that your cortisol will rise when there's a big stressful situation. So maybe you're in a car accident, or maybe somebody in your family gets ill, or maybe you lose your job, or you can't sell your house, or financial stress. Big things that happen in your life
right.
will cause these huge surges of cortisol, and that's when you're going to have the problem. But what people don't realize is actually the day-to-day little secretions of too much adrenaline, which spikes up the cortisol levels, and Carly can explain how that all happens. But it's the daily never-ending to-do list. It's the traffic. It's people pulling on you and you saying yes all the time and never being able to say no to things, and this constant tugging and not being able to balance your life, feeling like things are out of control. And it's little stresses that are happening to every single one of us, even myself. But I know how to deal with it now. But I'm just saying, most people don't have the tools to deal with these little stresses, and they get into this absolute state. Their hormones get into this absolute state, which causes havoc in their bodies and also causes them to react in certain ways. That's the fight, the flight, the freeze, or the fawn.
Mm.
So, and that comes from not necessarily a big thing that happened, but these little moments where you actually get to that point where you are going to explode. And that's what a lot of people do. They either fight, they fly. That's what happens.
Mm.
So in many moons ago, like look at hundreds and hundreds of years ago. I mean, look at, we busy watching 1883 and 1923, even before then.
Right.
You know, if you were in a stressed situation, it was because you were potentially getting robbed. Or you were running away from wild prey, like, you know, like a bear
wolf.
Or wolf. Yeah. You know, you were running for your life, or you were really stressed about your situation. You were getting attacked, or there was no food. Okay, so like
and
you were in
the,
those situations and you had a choice in that moment. So you're going to fight, like physically, you're actually going to fight. So all that worry and that anxiety and that stress and build up would go somewhere. You would actually fight it out. So you would burn it off in a way, you know, you'd release it. Or so you'd either run or you'd fight. Okay, so those are like, it was pretty simple. So yes,
and
huge,
it was
big
acute
situations.
Also, so
yes, chronic. Yeah, yes, that's it. So it's acute, not chronic. So short-lived, but you would get rid of it at that time. So it's actually quite wonderful in a way, because something would happen, but at the end of that something, you would either be dead, or you would have fought and won, or you would have run away. So you would have succeeded, but that adrenaline doesn't last.
But that was useful for its purpose.
For its purpose, it made you
react properly. And it still is
useful. Yes.
If it is acute, if it is short-lived, but unfortunately today it's not. Like the frenetic world we live in, these stresses are not isolated once every few week events. You know, they really are more consistent, exactly like
And the body doesn't know the difference between a lion chasing you and like a never-ending
deadline.
Your body doesn't know the difference.
Mm-mm.
That's interesting. So then what happens is your body
is persistently
excreting
to stress and
cortisol into your body
with no relief from it, unless you know what to do, unless you know how to support your body and bring down your stress level. So like fights in the olden days used to be like fights, you know, fight the boar, you fight the bear, you fight the lion, you do whatever, you know, you fight. But in this day and age, is going to look slightly different. So it could be like snapping. at your partner. Your partner asks you something, but you're about to tip, and then you snap, and you lash out. And not because of what your partner asked, it's because you're at the end of your tether, you know? So it's something like that. You get irritated easily, get angry easy. You're a perfectionist. Like, everything has to be absolutely perfect all the time. You have a controlling behavior. So these are all ways of, like, fighting your way through it.
Why are you looking at
me? Okay, I'm just giving you the side eye, that's all. Okay, then flight. So just to give you an example of, like, everyday life. So flight would no longer be running away, like sprinting for your life, you know, and getting the hell out of Dodge. You know, it's not going to be like that anymore. So what can happen now is that you're trying to escape a situation. Okay, so escaping can be like avoiding, overworking. So you're avoiding the real problems, actually. It could be things like rushing from task to task, people pleasing through just doing too much all the time. So it's a different kind of thing. It's running away from stuff not by physical running,
so
by
it's not, so you're not
emotional running.
But I think it's because of where we are today. We don't have the wolf that we have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have food security as generally. I mean, we have we run away from calories now. That's our big issue. We don't chase after calories.
It's avoidance from the real truth, because, like, you know that something's wrong. You know you've got to fix it, but sometimes, like, you can't deal with it. There's like a burning feeling in your chest, or there's anxious, you know, energy in your tummy like butterflies. So you just make yourself busier. So you're running from it in a different way. You're not running from the bear, but you're running from the problem.
Distraction, just, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So both of you are not psychologists, but I mean, I think about how I deal with stressful situations versus you, babe. I mean, it's very different. I grew up is very different from the way you grew up. And when stressful situations occur, what I like is I sometimes like stress.
Yeah. You thrive on it.
I thrive on it. 100%. I love it. I embrace it.
Yeah.
I grab it.
It's a little bit addictive for you, almost.
It's almost that way. Yeah. If there's a lack of it, then, like, the world's boring and things.
I have so many patients like that.
It's really?
Yeah.
Patients.
So many. What do you mean patients? Like that? My clients are like.
You're saying, like, you've got lots of patients.
You can't
like me.
Switch off. Yes.
That's true. I can't. That's true.
Steph often says to me, like, sleeping is the biggest waste of time. He wished that he could take a pill or that he didn't have to sleep. And for me, it's the best time of my day is when I've done my day. I feel good about my day. I close my eyes. I'm like, oh, for the next 7-8 hours,
rest.
I can
How
just
amazing.
Rest. It's so amazing.
If someone had to say, here's a pill, live an extra 50 years, or here's a
don't
pill.
Don't sleep.
Yes, I'll take the don't sleep pill.
Your perception is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's also something that I saw a psychologist write about, was saying if you feel uncomfortable resting, if you feel awkward or strange resting, doing nothing, it's a sign that there's some sort of nervous system dysregulation. Yeah. Like, you shouldn't feel
guilty
for resting. It means that you've tied your productivity to your worth so closely.
Yes.
And maybe.
But there's another angle to it.
Like, an unhealthy level.
Mm.
There's another aspect of it, and this is more psychological, and we can get to.
Okay, you can tell yourself this, baby.
Okay,
Let's go.
But no, the thing
two
is,
against one.
Yeah. So sometimes, like, I feel, and let me say it, and then you as ladies can respond. Sometimes I feel, because I'm in a home with three daughters and a wife, so I've got women around me all the time. I feel women take on things that derive stress, whereas they don't have to take it on. So
you mean we're
so
emotional?
Sometimes it's too much.
Oh, like we have feelings.
No, but don't do that. No, it's not that. It's like Lisa's a very, very emotional person. So, like, if someone resigns and says, okay, I'm leaving the business. I'm done.
Somebody chose not to work for me.
Yeah, that's how she processes
it. Oh my gosh,
what's
wrong with me?
She'll go into this, like, complete. She'll put up the mirror and go, "What's wrong with you? The business, is this worthwhile? Are we doing something wrong?" And I'm like, people move on, and that causes enormous amounts of stress.
Mm.
So I think there's a.
Makes me care so much about what I do. Mm. So it makes me, like, really passionate and sort of emotionally involved with what I do. And I think that's also really
a good thing.
I don't just work. I'm in it. I love it. It's my everything. It's
just,
I feel
you guys are
everything.
Spinning her handling of stress different.
Okay. Anyway, can I move on to the third one?
I think Lisa's handling stress brilliantly in compared to when I first met you. Also, Lisa, I see like a huge like difference in just your energy and the way that you. I think so.
Drugs,
but but that's just different people, and that's what's so interesting with the DNA resilience test we do as well. Is we can pick up on a lot of those different genes that influence the way we respond to stress, essentially, how we deal with stress, how easy it might be for some than others. I've done my husband's DNA resilience, and he's just got like really good genes everywhere, and he sometimes doesn't understand anxiety or doesn't understand how to deal with it. And people are different. We built differently. What we've gone through growing up changes how we respond to things.
So I guess the question for you is, you said DNA resilience, so that's the answer. First find out like,
it can help you understand how you respond to stress, how you wired, what is your innate capacity for stress, and what are the sort of areas that you need to look out for and you need to be aware of to prevent certain negative consequences like burnout or depression or anxiety from taking over.
But you guys talk about people have like issues that like abuse in their past that they haven't really.
Trauma is a whole nother episode.
Yeah, exactly. I think we are definitely going to do one about trauma.
Trauma, but I mean, we are, right?
100%.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, like, but trauma and past trauma, not this acute trauma, something that happened when you were 8, 7,
stored in the body,
that also kind of frames the way you're going to respond to stress-orientated, difficult situations. And that will lean into your cortisol responding in a particular way. Is that correct?
100%. I think there's that whole idea that the body keeps score, which I see as I get older more and more how true it is.
Keeps score. It's a book.
There's a book.
Really?
And then there's that Dr. Gabor Mate. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's like the trauma doctor, and he explains really physically how these serious capital T traumas, which are the big things like abuse and, you know, addicted parents and living in rape. Financial crisis and rape and things like that. And then the little T's, which are some of the other things you alluded to, how that mental or emotional stress has a huge impact on your physical body. So the risk of autoimmune disease goes up through the roof, and we're seeing more and more and more of this. And trauma is one of the legs of the risks and the risk factors for autoimmune
disease. So let's give it legs. So we're talking about cortisol and what impacts it or what triggers it. So one is definitely a psychological frame.
Mm-hmm.
One is a genetic frame.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the other one? A lifestyle frame.
Physical
lifestyle.
I mean, a really bad diet, carrying too much visceral fat, high levels of inflammation. There's like that bi-directional relationship with cortisol and all of those factors. So being sick all the time, unhealthy, not sleeping, those lifestyle factors can dysregulate your body's natural production of cortisol, or healthy production of cortisol.
Jesus, so this is a multi-dimensional.
It's a very, very complicated hormone.
So it's not this, you don't just go off and get a anti-cortisol pill.
No,
and then you.
I wish.
That would like save the world, pretty much.
Okay, yeah? So let's reframe this.
I want to talk about the third stress response, because you spoke a bit about fight and then flight, but there's the other one that's freeze.
Go ahead.
Okay, so like in real. Like, let's say olden day life, freeze would kind of be like, oh my gosh, you just froze. And then the lion clearly ate you, right? Because you just froze. You didn't know what to do. And you get a lot of people like that in a stressful situation that just go numb.
Mm.
They don't know what to do.
Right.
You know, in a stressful situation, if somebody is like getting hijacked, some people know exactly what to do.
Right.
And other people just freeze.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the freeze response. In everyday life, though, like day to day, it's disconnection. I don't know, I've had that definitely in the last year or so, where you feel like you're floating above your body, like your life is happening underneath you and you're floating above it. And it happens when you are under a lot of stress for a very long period of time, that you've actually hit like a bit of fatigue.
And overwhelm.
And overwhelm, yeah. So you need, you feel like you are not in your body, like you're slightly numb, disconnected. Like your life's happening there and you're here. Mm.
So dissociated.
Disassociated. Yeah. And like you're paralyzed in a way. You feel stuck. I mean, that has definitely happened to me a couple of times over the last year. And that's when I know I need a break. I need a holiday. Because I've worked so hard. And yes, I love what I do, but you're still a human.
100%.
So, and you get to that point where you're feeling a little bit like it doesn't really matter. Like you couldn't really care. Like, oh well.
Procrastinating is a big
procrastinating.
One.
Procrastinating. Yes, putting things off is a big one. So you've got so much to do, but you do nothing. So you like you sit on the couch, then you feel guilty for sitting on the couch, but you're still stuck. You just can't seem to move forward and get stuff done. And a lot of people are there. I would say probably most of the people I know are there, even in April.
I agree.
They're like already numb from the year because life's just going so fast.
So many patients have said that to me, that it feels like it's December already. It should be December.
But can I ask you from a patient perspective? We'll come back to freeze because I want to ask some questions about freeze. But we went through COVID, those two and a half years, and the pendulum swung quite violently. Mm. And I think a lot of people are still feeling, like people say COVID's over. It's actually not over. Mm. In the economy, we can see COVID's not over, right? So the way, just broad macroeconomics, you can still see that the waves that it caused are still rippling in the pond. And that to me is a metaphor for what's happening inside of everyone. Like we went home and we got stuck in our houses. We saw so much death.
Mm.
Death was echoed all around us all the time. We couldn't move. Governments took control. And then we had to socially distance. And those are all stressful. I mean, en masse, globally, we went through something that was so unique.
Mm.
I mean, these are multi-generational one-time things. I mean, the last time we saw someone was like 1918 flu. And then we had COVID. And the world just stopped.
Mm.
And then the world opened up again. And I think the pendulum went from, we created new habits. So when we went home, we saw all this death and all that stuff and vaccines and vaccine noise and all. And we then emerged from that. But when we emerged from that, we've grown new patterns. And people knew when to take the kids to school. They set up their desks at home. There was a new cadence in the home. And I find there's a lot of stress because I sit on a couple of boards and I hear in organizations the stress and the pull that they have with the employees. The employees don't want to go back to work.
No. Yeah.
But then there's that fear of, I don't go back, I can't, my job. But I've gotten used to this new rhythm of doing things. I take the kids to school in this way. We eat dinner this way. I work in this way. I don't want to go back to that big office. I don't want to sit in the traffic anymore. And so we went from a new habit in a way. And then we flung right back into the office again. And now there's this, like, CEOs are coming out and CEOs are saying, you will get back to the office. And I think all these things are putting so much, these are enormous tensions and
But
shifts.
South Africa also has its own tensions.
Well, there's like, the political stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then the world has its own tensions. So it just feels like we are living in a world that seems faster. It's got more issues than ever before.
So we're frenetic.
Dealing with a lot. And that's why I don't read the news, Staff at Macy.
Neither do I.
I stay far away. Staff does all of the reading for the whole family. And he will tell us the news in a very synopsis way.
Yeah,
and just give us the highlight report. And if we need to flee the country for whatever reason, we'll listen and we'll go because you would have read all the right articles. But I cannot, I cannot be exposed to all of that. It's just, it's overshare. It's like, it's too much. The pace of our day-to-day lives and our daily responsibilities are big enough.
100%,
I just don't, I don't want to take on South Africa's problems or the world's problems also. I will never sleep.
Yeah. And you feel like that lack of capacity. It's like if someone starts talking to you about whatever it might be, you just, I can't take it on. No, I'm done.
So coming back, so COVID and the session, but if you bring it, you guys are bringing it home, and I think it's true. I mean, South Africa, water gets cut, electricity gets cut, you know, political threats, headlines
Safety's
that are scary.
A huge one.
Safety. You keep going as a South African. And what I don't like is that the label that South Africans have in the world is resilience. I'm actually getting tired
of
that.
It.
I don't want to be resilient anymore. I want to be pioneering. I want to be innovative. I want to be all the other adjectives. I don't want to be resilient because resilience means
you've had to adapt.
Fight. You've had to fight for
you're there irrespective of. And I think as South Africans, cortisol, I think, is probably a pandemic. Because of what we're dealing with. I mean, we do the political instability, the headlines, the physical stuff that we experience, traffic lights that are out, unexpected traffic, things breaking, guys
it's
jumping.
It's unknown. It's just like we constantly don't know if everything's going to be okay 6 months or a year
the
from
what
now.
If. Yeah.
The what if, you know, do we settle, or do we like have a plan B in place because we just never know?
Oh, but like, then you look scary, at the, and you then know? You look at the globally, like Trump and like all the stuff there, and then this, like today, we're recording this podcast now, the tariffs, and like the world just feels
gritty,
very broken, stressful, it's not settled, uncertain.
It's not, yeah, calm. And we are living in a hard time, I feel.
And I think we need to recognize, for the listeners that are listening to this podcast, I think maybe this does resonate, that there's all these ancillary things that are not necessarily to do with your specific trauma.
But it's, they're in the background.
They're in the background. It's, that's in, why, your context.
How much are you going to read? How much are you going to absorb? How much are you going to let bounce off you? I mean, the other day I actually did a class, and with our arms, the entire class, we used our arms to create a bubble.
I love that. Bubble.
Steph would probably have just rolled his eyes in the class going, what are you on, chick?
Why don't you guys all one less lion's mane for you tomorrow.
It's a good idea. It'll lower your cortisol.
No, but it was the whole thing was around creating the bubble around our bodies, and that we're going to take that with us for the rest of the day.
Love
and
that.
Like, we're going to let everybody's words and everybody, the negativity of everything, just bounce off our bubble, because you need to protect yourself sometimes, like, from all the negativity. I do that all the time.
100%.
You know, Steph will tell me about what's going on in the world, and I'll just say, I don't have capacity right now. I'm at the end. Please don't tell me anything more about anything else. Just, I don't want to know. And often I say, who cares? I actually use this with him. Babe, I can't. I just, I
can
put
my
hands up.
It? No.
And I'm like, put my hands up with this look on my face. Like, I can't. I don't.
You know,
don't
sometimes I'll be reading in bed and I think to myself, should I tell her? Because there's many times I'll tell her a story and like Lisa will just start crying.
Yeah, no, I can't.
And it's like some bear died in Alaska because it couldn't jump from one little ice block to another. And she's just like, why are we living? Why are we here? What can we do?
No, because sometimes when you look at just, you wonder if it's all worthwhile. Like, you wonder if you're even making any difference at all. It kind of feels like it's worthless. And, you know, I don't want to ever feel like that. I just want to live in my little bubble, do everything I can to make the world better with what the time I have here, and live my life to the full.
And I think that's why purpose is probably so important, and finding your purpose. Because finding your purpose means you can navigate the stressful world.
Well, you shut out the noise. That is 100%. You just shut out the noise.
Got more direction here. Yeah.
See, let me just tell you my derivative of it. So you avoid it. I run into it. Because what I love is just to defend the versions of me that
you
are
love
there.
Drama.
No, I don't love. That's not.
You're
drama.
Addicted to drama, babe.
No, listen.
It's Stafford, drama, Macy.
So listen, what I love about it is it's the historical context, the looking at it from a periodic perspective, a phase perspective, a humanities. I love the macro of things.
So you can assimilate it. Yeah. Maybe if we did your DNA resilience, you'd be able to pick up something that he could handle a lot of, like, stress. And maybe you can deal with it. You can contextualize it. You've also very well read. So you can put it into boxes. You love the history. You can just connect the dots, and you actually thrive on knowing all of this
stuff.
But, logical,
but not all of
analytical.
Us are built that way. There are a lot of us that would rather just not know. Like, so honestly, we're living for now and the future and what we can contribute and our purpose and joy and, like, all of that. And what happened in the history is history. Like, honestly, really.
But you know what I will say, just personal confession, it affects my sleep. My number one challenge around consistency, around life, is sleep. It's just because I can't shut my
mind.
Well, you know, there's
busy.
This thing called, like, plenty lion's mane.
Yeah, I know.
I've said it like 4 times in this podcast, okay? Yes, maybe you should just take a bit more.
A little bit more, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, you're a bit erratic with it. It
don't
only works when you
doses.
Take it. Yeah, Steph? Okay. And I know you don't like that it makes you more chilled, but we all love it.
You know,
we
love
that it makes you more chilled.
Can you guys please, in the comments of this, what this is going
to
be on
no,
Spotify.
No, stop asking people to defend you.
Please say, I'm going to put a donation cup up.
But you know that you love drama when your 8-year-old on holiday says the first line she said that just made me bend over in half. She said, Dad, stop catastrophizing everything.
That's what she said.
How did Bella say
that? Catastrophizing.
That
was her word for our last holiday. I looked at her. I was like, how did you know that word? And to even put it in
that
context.
Clever.
Because your dad, you know, everything is, if something's R5, it's R10.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. If, like, if she had...
we have to change the subject of
6 lychees for breakfast, why did she have 20? It's just, it's always drama. Like, the
over-exaggerated
the hyperbole. The fuel tank is on more, it's on 3/4, but we're halfway.
Okay.
Like, we're almost going to run out of petrol,
yeah.
even though we just filled up, like, 2 stops ago. But it's just...
so it's almost like you're asking your body to produce adrenaline and cortisol.
I think he thrives on
the high.
On the high. I think he likes the excitement.
The go.
But I think there's that side of it. But I think the other side of it is, and I'm trying to be self-critiquing here. I think if you grow up in a particular way where you always have to understand what's around
the
corner.
The worst case scenario.
And you always have to be independent because you don't have a fallback. I think there's between the two of us, we're an interracial couple. And I'll say this. that when two people from completely different cultures come together, and specifically around stress, how you handle stress is in a very privileged person's way of handling stress. Mine is a very different upbringing.
Mm.
You know, I'm a lot more of an independent self, non-reliant on any one type of person, stress.
But privileged only because of my color, not because of my upbringing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's not that. But it's interesting to observe how different we are from the past that we have relative to that.
Mm.
Dealing with stress. It really, really is interesting. Like, for me, you're very chilled. I am thinking about every derivative that could potentially go wrong, because I'm just making sure, because the way I grew up, you got to think three things, because there's no backstop.
10
there's
steps no, ahead
you
almost.
You got to just, you have to. And it's
but I think it's a dangerous cycle to get into, because you're constantly thinking about what could go wrong instead of like, let's live for the moment, you know. I'm using today as an example, because Bella went to that like ninja park place where they go run up. That's where I tore my calf last year.
Yeah.
But beautiful. They have so much fun there, and it's so good for her. It's healthy, you know. It's very, very healthy way to spend an afternoon. And whatnot. And I will be thinking, amazing, go do it. It's so good for your body. It's a nice outlet, you know. And Steph's thinking of all the germs that she's going to pick up, and she's going to be sick next week. Like, that's what he literally says. My darling, just don't touch your face. Don't forget to sanitize your hands every 5 seconds. Don't eat without washing your hands. And he's just thinking, Bella's going to be sick in the next 3 days. You watch. He even says to her, you're going to be sick in 3 days' time. And I just feel like you're not alone, hey babe. There are a lot of people like you that look on the negative side of things, or the realistic side, maybe.
Well, bring it back.
I don't know.
It's like, maybe
it's trying to prevent danger, really.
But that's it.
Is that a way to live?
No, like, it's not.
How stressful?
No, you're right. And I think maybe my fight and flight, because I think I...
They had a baby.
That's so clever.
I think my fight and flight and freeze and fawn and all of those things are compounded. I think I'm always in that mode. I'm always in the tweaked mode. I'm never in the chill.
Rest and digest.
I'm realizing that now. Like, I'm not chilled.
Unless you're asleep.
I feel like chilled is unprepared.
Yeah.
Chilled is dangerous.
Lazy.
No. Well, yes, I can even go there with it.
Mm.
But I think it's just unprepared. It's not thinking things through. My daughters, I teach them this all the time. Be careful. And I think maybe I'm
too
generationally
much,
programming. Yeah. And I think if you're a man out there, listen to this, because I think men generally, this is so like, maybe I shouldn't say this, but men generally are like me.
They're protective. And
yeah, but I think the way we deal with stress is not the way you would. I mean, I read and stuff because I have to protect my family.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make sure that you're financially, physically, politically,
safe.
We are safe. And I think because I'm in a home with women, I mean, my kids go out at night, Bethany and Amber, and they adults. And my phone is off silent, and I'm listening to that thing the whole time. And the deal is, you just have to tell me when you've gotten home. So I wake up and I look at my phone, it's at 3 a.m.
Okay, but now listen, if that is going to be the way you are, because I have tried to change this, man, it's been 11 years, it's not going to work.
Okay,
besides the health side of things, which you are much better at,
right.
If that is who you are, and you know that that is just your purpose, that's like, it's who you are in our family.
Right.
You are the protector, and you're going to always read, and you're always going to be the person that's thinking worst case scenario, and I'll always be the one that's thinking best case scenario.
Right.
So I think we balance each other out quite nicely.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that the big thing is how are you going to take away that stress?
Yes.
How are you going to relieve that your body from all that adrenaline that you are dealing with every day that isn't healthy?
100%.
And how are you going to bring your cortisol levels down so that you don't land up with an autoimmune disorder or cancer or whatever, or inflammation? Like, if that is how you're going to be, you're going to have to do a lot more than the average person, I think, to make sure that you keep a balanced cortisol level. Because you definitely are going to have somebody that's got a higher cortisol level.
And it does make you sick. And I think that's the thing.
So someone like me.
Yeah.
Like, diagnose me. So I'm definitely, I can, when you
wired.
Guys talk about, I'm wired.
Yes, that's a good
cortisol
word.
Cortisol is always like around me.
Alert.
I guess. Alert. So what are the things that I should watch out for? Is it adrenal fatigue? Are these the things that come from it?
So what we typically see happening is when there's this over secretion of cortisol, when there's constant production, it should, let's just go back to basics, it should spike in the morning when the sun comes up to wake us up. So cortisol
is the natural
it should rise to a healthy level in the morning, wake you up, but wake you up without panic, without anxiety, so you're able to wake up and get going. And then it should slowly, gradually start to come down as the day progresses. And then as we're supposed to go to sleep, melatonin is supposed to take over and cortisol is now going to calm down so that we can fall asleep. But when we have all of these, like, I suppose, triggers or stimuli in the day, yeah, whether it's traffic or stress or a deadline or coffee,
phones,
blue light, screen time, that all creates inappropriate release of cortisol throughout the day when it shouldn't be spiking, essentially.
Okay.
But what we have to remember is that chronically elevated levels of cortisol is neurotoxic. So that means it's dangerous to the brain. The brain doesn't like having this elevated cortisol. So then what happens is the body's so smart, it wants to come back to balance, it wants to adapt, it wants to come back to homeostasis. The brain then sends a signal to the adrenal glands and says, shush, calm down, shut off, I can't cope with this level of cortisol and adrenaline. And that's when we see the low cortisol. So you almost shift from high cortisol, which is highly strung, tired but wired, go, 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 can't sleep, always vigilant, always switched on, high anxiety. And then the other side of the coin is complete burnout, suppression, and that's the body only trying to protect you. I'm surprised it hasn't happened to you, but I actually think it might have without you knowing it.
Or his resilience, when your body gets sick, is like really amazing. Like, you know, his DNA resilience. Maybe he's got the most amazing genes, so he reached that point many times are close and never really happened fully.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because he's just got really great DNA.
Yeah.
You know, like Dylan, like your hubby. So maybe that's also possibly in your favor.
Yeah.
Maybe another guy dealing with
test
things the way
often.
You deal with them would have collapsed by now. But you don't, because you've got great genes. So it'd be interesting to see what your resilience test would say. You should do it.
So there's that communication between the brain and the adrenals. It's basically called the HPA axis. So the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And that's essentially the more medical term for burnout. Instead of saying adrenal fatigue or burnout, it's not really a medically respected term, but HPA axis dysfunction is. So that can mean high cortisol or low cortisol. And then there's also DHEA, which is another adrenal hormone that links to cortisol. So DHEA gives us some resilience. It feeds into our sex hormones, but that also takes a knock with chronic stress. So those are the two that we would test to kind of discern where someone might be in that spectrum of, are they still in the really high wired side or are they in the burnt out side?
It's fascinating. So I think one of the reasons, you know, I don't actually think it's because I'm so resilient. And I think it's the lifestyle
that's helped you.
Absolutely.
I mean, the way Lisa eats,
your Carly, supplements.
The supplements that you've, through my DNA, how you've deciphered what I need and the all of that stuff. And just generally, I think I'm ultra healthy.
You've got the buffer.
Yeah, I've got the ultra healthiness, but that, I think I just got to be careful. So you were going to go into some more things.
Well, the last thing I wanted to just talk about was that fourth response, which
yes.
I don't think people speak about a lot, and that is the one called fawn. Mm. Okay, so I'm going to put my hand up here because I definitely think this is me, like without a doubt.
The conflict avoider.
So what it is, it's people pleasing, abandoning your own needs, over-apologizing, trying to fix or keep the peace.
Yeah, that's you.
That is when it's the Cancerian in me, right? Walk sideways, anything but actually hit it head on, because that means a confrontation and that means a possible fallout. And what would that mean? You know, so I think there's a lot of people out there. It's like you are so busy, your plate is so full, but you still say yes.
Mm.
I find it very hard to say no. It's something that I've been working on for a decade. And I'm still haven't got right. Some days and months I get it more right, but most of the time it's still something I do a lot. Is I want to be able to please everybody, and everybody must be okay all the time, you know, at my own cost, often. So that's called fawn. And I think there's a lot of people out there, especially moms, you know, women that own their own businesses, they're working, they're mothering, they've got a husband, they've got these big lives, and they are saying yes to everyone and everything. But the one thing I must say I have got right is that I say yes to me first. So that is something that I learned a long time ago. Mm. So yes, I do say yes to everybody else. So that's something I'm working on. But I do say yes to me. And I don't see a lot of people doing that. They say yes to everyone else and then no to themselves. And they come last. So for me, when I say yes to me, I put self-care ahead of everything else. I exercise. I go to sleep properly. I eat properly.
It protects
me from falling over. So that's my protective mechanism, is the fact that if I wasn't so kind of focused on health first and me first, the oxygen mask on me before anyone else, I probably would also have had adrenal burn. out by now. I would have had that fatigue, some kind of burnout. But I think what saved me every time is the fact that I'm putting into my tank, first and foremost, so that I can better serve others and be a better version for everyone else.
I love that saying that you have what you need to be selfless, you need to be selfish.
Yeah.
You've coined that.
And I learned that a long time ago. So, yeah, I think that saved my life probably because this is definitely 100%. Me.
But you know what I think? I think it's very important to also talk about the other person in your relationship. Because one of the things that I recognize
with you...
Yes,
babe, you're amazing.
No. The one thing that I recognize with you is that I get the best of you when I take my foot off the gas.
Interesting.
I don't get in Lisa's way. I try sometimes, but I've learned to recognize the trigger very... Like, babe, I'm doing this now. Or the way she trains and it's her time. And I will take Bella and occupy Bella. And I'll move Bella out of the thing. I will... make sure
EQ rich of you, babe.
Yeah, but why is everyone sounding so surprised because I do one good thing?
but it's a good thing that you've been able to identify
as men,
get the best out of your wife. Yes. What do you need to do to empower help that her. To help her along?
Well, let her go.
Yes.
To the guys out there, if you listen to this podcast, you want your wife not to suffer from adrenal fatigue and have all this cortisol secretion stuff going on. I think it's understanding who you are relative to that. And I do think you can say exactly what you said there. But what we've tried, and I think the whole family understands, I think that our girls, our daughters understand that.
Mm.
Like Lisa's doing that. And I think Bella, as a child, she's now 8 going on 9, she understands. And she won't nag you. And she won't make it difficult for you either. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah, she is a lot
But when you say, I'm going to go do this, I have to.
Yeah, she doesn't lay on the guilt so much anymore.
Yeah, she'll have a sad face, but then she goes, okay, cool, I get it. Mm. Because when mom comes back from there,
she'll be happy.
Yeah,
she'll
she's
be happy.
Had her fix and she'll be a happy mom.
And that's so important for couples. And so important for people in relationships. So
you don't build up resentment because I do think that a lot of like that whole fawn thing where you're putting everyone else's needs above your own, it builds up this inner anger and this inner resentment where everybody else's needs are more important than you, you know, than your own. Mm. And I think that that anger, that resentment does build up like adrenaline and cortisol, like without a doubt. It's this like consistent little bit of anger that's underlying that is not healthy. So I think that fawn is probably like for me I relate to personally, but I think a lot of women that I'm seeing that are trying to balance it all and be good to everyone all the time and be good for and everything, it's like that's what they're dealing with. But it's underneath that when you really start to talk to them like, are you happy? You know, and there's like, no, like I feel I'm a bit bitter actually. I'm feeling angry with my family and my husband and like I'm not happy. And it's coming from that, this need to please people all the time and not put yourself first.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So it's just this underlying, like this very, very, very sort of low grade stress that's happening. Yeah. I think to a lot of people, men and women, but I'd say a lot of the women I meet are definitely dealing with that.
Mm. Yeah. And I heard something the other day that was so interesting, where animals, so like a little springbok that might get chased by a lion, their adrenaline and cortisol is through the roof when they're being chased by the lion. But then afterwards, the lions run away, they've survived, they'll shake it off. So they shake, 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 shake. That gets rid of the cortisol. And then they go back to eating grass and they're fine.
But you know, that's dogs too. Dogs do zoomies.
Yes.
So every time the dog gets like an energy burst, you know, when they start zooming around, that's them getting rid of stress, of cortisol.
Cute.
So they don't know what else to do. They can't speak. They can't like fight, you know what I mean? So what they do is they get the zoomies and they start running around like crazy things. And I'm like, I find it hilarious. Coco and Harley do it all the time. And it's their natural response of getting rid of cortisol and adrenaline.
It's amazing.
I think like nature's amazing.
Animals are clever.
So
in
listen,
that way.
I want to ask you this. So I'm listening to this. I want to know my cortisol normal, not normal. Mm. What do I do? Is it a blood test? Is it do I call Carly? Okay. No, don't go into the DNA, so we'll get to that later. But like, what's the quick check just to see high, low, normal?
Well, first of all, how do you know you have it? Like, what are some of the telltale signs? Like, I think I might have high cortisol. Like,
I think everything we've been chatting about in terms of what Steph's been speaking about, so hypervigilance, anxiety that never switches off, battling to turn the mind off, battling to sleep, overthinking, like a traffic jam in your head all the time, struggling to stay still, struggling to just sit and just be, the sleep issues, maybe weight issues as well, so struggling to lose weight or just this persistent weight gain despite trying everything, tired but wired.
Wait, that's a big one. Persistent weight gain.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack it, because I know that we've spoken about it before. I also spoke about it on the belly podcast when we spoke about abdominal fat and the myths and stuff, weight loss.
Cortisol belly is what we see.
And you get people that train really hard, they're eating really, really well.
Is this a thing?
Yes,
it's on social media. It's not really a medical thing.
And it's also the fight or flight thing. It's linked to like how we store fat, and we store fat in close proximity to where your kidneys, your liver would need it in a time of stress response. Mm-hmm. But if it's not getting released, so you're not fighting or flighting, it gets stored, and it gets stored in your midriff. So this tire around your belly, even if you are eating well, even if you are training hard, you can have this thickness in your waistline, women and men.
Visceral fat.
And it's just coming from stress.
You have to explain it to
me. Okay, so Carly, you go into the science.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. So cortisol gets secreted.
So cortisol is the stress hormone. So think about biologically, let's maybe go back a few steps and think what happens when that cortisol is secreted. So your heart rate goes up. Okay, blood vessels dilate to allow for oxygen to go to the brain and to the muscles. Blood pressure goes up as well for increased pumping. We actually have, this is really interesting, an increased secretion of glucose from the liver and from the muscles when cortisol is high. So I see this a lot with my insulin resistance patients. It's often linked to dysregulated cortisol. So when there's this inappropriate secretion of cortisol, the body's like, oh my goodness, release sugar. I need energy to like fight or flight or whatever it is, or run. So there's the secretion of sugar when it might not be needed.
Right.
So that's linked to the weight as well. And then what else? The blood flow goes away from the gut. So all of these physiological, biological changes. And from a weight perspective, the body's panicking, the body's stressed, the body's like, I don't know when I'm going to get a meal. Again, if we go back to ancient times, you were prepping for hibernation, I suppose, or like a long winter. Or your body's like, I'm going to need a lot of energy to run away from this lion. Best I pack on some pounds to make sure that I've got the energy to respond appropriately.
Okay.
So the body, in an adaptation or in a survival mechanism, I suppose, stores the fat in case of emergency, because there's always this threat and this perceived stress. So it's thinking, let me be two steps ahead, like you thinking, the body's thinking that, and saying, let me make sure I've got extra money in the account. Let me make sure I've got supplies reserves ready. So with that high cortisol, we see the water retention. We see the belly fat that's just really, really stubborn. And I see it all the time when we're doing the in-body. Somebody can be eating perfectly, exercising exactly like they should, even sleeping well. But if there's that dysregulation with the stress hormones, that visceral fat does not budge.
The body's amazing.
So stubborn.
And your body's really good at storing fat and energy. It's kind of like you can, I know that there's a way to test, right, Carly? There's like, if you've kind of evolved, if because there are some people that are more prone to storing fat.
It's genetic.
And some people have almost like evolved out of it, because it is quite a old school thing. It's hundreds and hundreds of years old. And some people, it's like prehistoric. So that whole like storing fat, some people still have that, like, I don't want to call it a fat storing gene, but it is. A fat storing gene. And some people have it and some people don't. And it's like, have they evolved? Has their genetic makeup evolved or not? And if it hasn't evolved, you will store like more fat than another person next to you in a stressful situation.
So you could have the fat gene.
There's a few of the different genes. They have come from times of famine, actually, is where the gene came about to try and protect us, you know. So think about the Holocaust, for example. That's basically what would the body's like, I need to make sure that any calories I get in is stored, because I don't know when I'm going to get that again. So that stressful biological change has
and
a
now
similar
we just
impact.
Open the fridge 5 times a day, and you know,
opposite.
We call Uber Eats, and we don't have that stress anymore. But you remember, your body doesn't know the difference between stressed about being starving, about famine, and about worrying about when your next meal's coming, being chased by a lion, and your never-ending to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, all of this sort of adrenaline, this cortisol production, the more it happens, the more you're storing around your midriff. End of story.
Wow.
Yeah, 100%. So you're not fighting it.
You guys, for the first time, I understand.
You get it.
Yeah. Okay.
Think about it in another way. It's not exactly, but it's a similar way to think about, is when you have cortisone or prednisone, the steroid medication that you might have to take to lower inflammation or to fight off an infection. What do we see? loss of muscle mass with that, increased storage of fat, and water retention. Puffiness, that moon face, can happen when patients have to take cortisone or prednisone, which is a similar biological makeup or chemical makeup to cortisol. So that's what happens. And that's where a lot of people get frustrated because they're like, I'm doing everything. I'm trying so hard. I'm eating so well, but this isn't budging. And you've got to then look a little bit deeper.
Okay, so that's if you go, if you want to stress so much, everybody, then good luck trying to lose weight. So you're going to stress yourself fat. And that's why they say you could also sleep yourself thin. Because 100%. When you sleep well, you lower your cortisol levels. And when you lower your cortisol levels, you're lowering your fat storage hormones, okay, and so you're going to lose weight. So often when you sleep well, stress less, and that's what I want to talk about.
It becomes easier.
When you go on holiday, some people obviously drinking like a trooper, and they're eating way too many calories, and they're forgetting about movement, okay? So they come back, and they're not in a good place because the balance is off. When we go away, I definitely sleep better. I sleep a bit more. You know, I do. I got to bed a bit earlier. We wake up a little later and there's more sleep. Then, of course, there's no meetings. There's no rushing. There's no traffic. There's no Joburg. There's none of that. So the stress is definitely reduced. Like, I'd say at least 50%.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Exercise is actually increased.
It's
because
more
we step.
Consistent.
We do the 20,000, 30,000 steps a day. We're in water parks. We do bouncing, booting. We're definitely more active.
Yeah.
If not as active, sometimes more. But we eat. Definitely more like
pizza,
ice cream you know, we enjoy our holidays, but every single time within days
you
can
de-puff.
See I de-puff. You are like
that's
a
word.
And I get like leaner. I come back always tanned, looking good, feeling good, and I'm leaner than when I left. And people often say, you've been on holiday for a month, how? And I'm like, because cortisol.
Doesn't that show
is.
You like also wow. that calories are not everything?
Yeah, 100%. There's
They're
all these other factors,
but it's not the whole picture.
But we always say like our pants get loose on holiday, and we're like feeling so good, not just a tan, but just the stress is less.
Okay, coming back, I'm listening to this. What do I do? Just quickly, what's the test? Where do I go?
So blood tests are the way to analyze it. DNA doesn't really, it can show certain genes that are responsible for breaking down these stress hormones, but cortisol changes all the time, right? So blood tests are where you would start. And I would suggest asking your practitioner, your health practitioner, endocrinologist is probably the best person to go to. Checking cortisol fasted in the morning between 6 and 9 in the morning, and then also looking at DHEA and looking at the ratios. Different practitioners have different reference ranges. For me, I prefer more optimal, tighter reference range. Where are you at your healthiest, not what's just normal or acceptable.
Right.
So cortisol, ideally in that morning test, between 280 to 350. That's the sort of healthy spot.
Okay.
I hardly see that. I saw one patient last week who had perfect cortisol, perfect DHEA, but it's very rare that I see, you're good.
What do they do?
I think they have really good genetics, but also they've got the lifestyle in place. They're not overweight, they're exercising, they're taking the right supplements, they're meditating, they're doing their breathing, they're sleeping well. Some people are also just blessed in that they're good sleepers.
Yeah.
So that helps a lot. And then the DHEA is different depending on how old you are, whether you're male or female. So there's different reference ranges for that. But I do test them for my patients as well, because I think it's really intertwined with nutrition and the dietary strategies that I might give you. So I do check cortisol and DHEA. If the levels are really way too high or really way too low, I will send the patient to an endocrinologist, because there are other medical conditions that could be causing this hypersecretion of cortisol. So that could be something like Cushing's, or the really low cortisol could be an autoimmune disease, Addison. So sometimes it is necessary to rule out those more serious, scary medical conditions. But most of the time, it's stress related, or this HPA axis dysfunction.
Can I ask a dumb question? Does coffee increase cortisol levels?
It does in the short term. Some people build up some sort of an adaptation to it, where their body gets used to it and they don't. But I think it depends on the individual and how many stresses they're exposed to. Because if you're exposed to, you know, millions of triggers in the day, coffee might just be the tipping point or the thing that pushes you over the edge.
But also, you can test that with DNA Health. You can test how your body metabolizes caffeine.
And DNA Core.
And DNA Core. So, like for me, I am a fast metabolizer
me
of
too.
Caffeine. So, I'm really, it doesn't affect me. I could have a cup of coffee and go to bed. So, and other people, if they have coffee after 12 midday,
it stays in the system.
I still don't do that. I still only have my one cup a day, just in case. You know, I'm always like, just in case. But yeah, so that is a big, again, back to DNA, it's a very personalized thing. If you can't tolerate caffeine and it's going to affect you the whole day and it's going to affect your sleep, now that is not going to help cortisol.
Mm-mm.
It's going to keep you wired, right, and you're not going to sleep, and that is going to affect your cortisol. So it has a long-term effect. But if you're a fast metabolizer, your body handles caffeine no problem. And you actually thrive on caffeine. A few genes, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, look, too much coffee isn't good for your bones. It's not good for a few other things. But are you asking that because you don't drink coffee?
Yeah,
I'm just thinking now, maybe because you haven't had that stimulus as well, that could have given you some level of protection. And looked after your adrenals.
I can't remember what we checked my. But another question I have, it's also dumb. If you skip a meal?
It's a stress to the body as well. So that's a big thing now with this whole fasting.
Skip breakfast, intermittent fasting and all that.
And these long fasts that people are doing, these 48-hour water fasts.
I saw a guy the other day, 72 hours.
Wow.
72-hour fast.
I understand the benefit from an autophagy perspective, but I think for majority of people who are living in this frenetic fight or flight state, and there is going to be some level of imbalance with their cortisol and DHEA, I don't think fasting is the best best approach to take, especially in the morning. And most people skip breakfast. Eating protein, eating healthy fat in the morning is going to help control that cortisol from spiking too high. So it's going to help give your body a bit of a buffer and a bit of ability to handle that cortisol spike. So my guidelines to my patients are try and eat before like 9 in the morning, depending what time you're waking up. But you should try and eat something containing protein within 2 hours of waking up. If you feel like you've got that elevated cortisol, if you're waking up anxious every morning, or if you're waking up feeling like you've been hit by a bus, or if you're getting those heart palpitations and racing mind and struggling to focus, always being on edge.
Well, lion's mane people, okay, I think this is the fifth time I'm saying this in this podcast, because we've had a lot of our clients that have started taking their two tablets, their two little capsules of
plenty.
Lion's
just
mane.
By the way, Lisa's talking about plenty lion's mane. Go to iamplenty.com.
In the morning.
Subtle.
Yeah, subtle. Yeah. There you go. Very subtle there, babe. In the morning. So it's not necessarily at night to help with sleep, like taking it an hour to an hour and a half before going to bed and helping you to get a good night's sleep. But it's more about the fact that you're so anxious throughout the day, you're having so much, you really are facing a lot of stress, and you've got to take the edge off so that you can sleep better that night. So actually having lion's mane in the morning, and if you're going through quite a chronic stressful period, you can even take up to 6 lion's mane a day, 2 in the morning, 2 at lunch, 2 in the evening.
Really?
If you're going through a very, very stressful situation, and then you can come down to 4, and then you can go down to like more of a maintenance dose of 2. But everybody's different.
You're right. There's one of our clients that's doing that.
Doing it in the morning. Yeah. She says it's the only way that she can cope with stress.
I always take mine in the morning.
No, but she takes 6 a day.
Oh, okay.
She's got chronic stress, and she has said it's the only thing that's helped her, like just to take the edge off, calm, you're not having that anxious feeling like you've got butterflies in your tummy, like something is about to go wrong. You know that feeling of like something doesn't feel right.
Impending doom is the medical way.
Some people feel like that all the time. But
the
lion's mane has helped to take that away, which helps them to cope better in the day. They're not getting those huge, big, you know, cortisol spikes, and then they sleep better.
So lion's mane, by definition, is an adaptogen, right?
Guys, you know
talk about that, because Carly says an adaptogen. So speak a little bit about that just for 2 seconds.
So an adaptogen is basically a plant or herbal extract that's able to buffer your body's response to stress. They are so smart, so intelligent, and there's no medicine that can do this, no pharmaceutical drug that can do it. So basically an adaptogen has the ability to read where your body's at and figure out, okay, cortisol's high, let me help her bring it down, or him bring it down. Cortisol's low, it helps to actually pick it up. So it can work bidirectionally, which is just incredible.
Mushroom is an amazing thing.
That's the first time I've heard it
explained
to me like that.
That's what an adaptogen is. So it buffers the response to stress, and it can look at your body, it assesses your body, and it can decide, how am I going to help today?
It's like a natural AI in your body.
No, it's are incredible.
So lion's mane is one of the adaptogens, but then there are others as well. Ashwagandha, reishi, rhodiola. There's a few that you can look at.
Miracle
but
things, eh?
Amazing, amazing. Lion's mane is one of the most well-researched, though. Sure. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. So I want to talk about something else, because I remember this when I used to exercise really hard all the time. So I used to run a lot. Mm-hmm. I used to do like, you know, 5 to 10 Ks every second day. I used to do a lot of over exercising. So I used to train with my clients twice or three times a week. I used to take 2 or 3 classes a day. I used to overtrain, without a doubt, overtrain, and always, never on a rebounder. This was many years ago. And I was always puffy, always inflamed, always stiff and sore, always tired, always reaching for carbs, always felt like a nap in the middle of the day. It was, I was definitely overtraining. I was stressing my body out in a big way.
And I, when I look at Lisa pre-rebounding,
different.
It's incredible, because I remember when I met you, I thought you were like this fit. When I look at you now versus then, it's actually quite astonishing. Those Australia pics, or Bangkok, or USA, wherever we were. Like, I look at those pictures, and you can see the inflammation. It's actually shocking how swollen Lisa looks in those pics.
And swapping out my so reducing the amount of exercise I do in a day has been massive. Like, I won't train twice a day.
So important.
On a shoot, you know. But other than that, it's once a day with 24 hours rest, as much as rest as I can take. Changing out my form of exercise from high impact to low impact has been amazing. To cutting out the running, which is obviously really, really damaging for one's body, especially as you get older, and doing it too often without proper care, and foam rolling and massage and, you know, strength training and all those things thrown in. My body's changed, my inflammation's changed, my puffiness, my water retention, my energy, my fatigue. I mean, like, everything has changed. So tell us a little bit about overtraining and or training too hard, like HIIT training, CrossFit-y type training, too much, and what that does to the body from a stress perspective.
I think such a good point. I would have forgotten to speak about that, and I've had to fight with so many of my patients to convince them to do what you did and scale back and go more low impact, and then they thank me a month later because they see those results. But exercise is a stress to the body. It's a good stress if your body can handle the intensity that you're looking at. But so many people who have had, let's say, a really stressful day at work just want to go and sprint on a treadmill and then go do high impact jarring exercise that might be really inflammatory to the joints. And so that is going to pump up cortisol further. So it really depends on where your body's at and where your adrenals are at in terms of what exercise might be more beneficial. For me also, I love your classes, Lise. They are my fave, but I have to be careful. I can't do them every day.
Neither because can I,
Carly. You see, so
once a week.
I do have to take it down a notch, and you have to listen to your body and understand if you've had a really stressful day. Yes, you might feel great afterwards with endorphins and getting your heart rate through the roof, but what is the long-term effect? How is your sleep quality going to be? What's your cortisol going to be the next day? Those are the things you have to think
about.
But
at least be doing something crazy like my class on a Monday night, but it's in a low impact
100%.
Manner on a rebounder that absorbs 70 to 80% of
and
one's
and you're not doing
body
it twice a
weight,
day.
You know,
that's exactly. That's the thing. You're balancing it out. So I think,
and then the next day you're gonna do something lighter.
Yes.
So maybe you'll do a sculpt workout.
Yeah.
And we're talking about rebounding, or maybe you're gonna go and do some light weight training
or
and a walk
or
a yoga session or Pilates session or whatever it is. But it's, you don't have to go all out every day because that is actually going to cause more damage long term, especially if you are undergoing some stress in your life. It's gonna create more havoc in your system.
100%.
Actually saying on good strong days is where you push hard and you listen to your body, and the days where you're not feeling great, don't nothing, but do go for a walk.
Gentle.
You know, do more gentle. Do a beginner rebounding class if we're talking about rebounding.
Or just lymphosize.
Yeah, get on your rebound and just bounce it out.
You know what's interesting? That we get so many, and this is a social media thing. This is something I've been speaking with my daughters about, Bethany and Amber specifically, is social media at the moment is we understand the rage algorithm aspect of it, right? So it feeds your rage. So if you like something,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the algorithms are they make money when they make you angry, when
oh
they
my
feed
goodness.
Your rage. You know, you click more, you watch longer.
Engagement is better.
Engagement. So the fitness function is engagement, and the fitness function's underlying substrate is rage. If they get you mad and you become mad at the system, mad at this, and you become Republican or you become Democrat, or they love that, so that they feed that. But there's this other aspect of social media that it's much more sinister and subtle, and that is that you're not enough, that you can do more.
Ooh, that's a
push
biggie.
Harder.
the be David, better, the more Dave, good looking,
the
more
David Gog. Well, that's also the good looking. Those are the easy ones, but the more
not for women,
but the one I'm honing in on now is the one that is subtle, and it's the one that you go to LinkedIn. LinkedIn is just a platform that shows you people that are flexing, achieving more. they got this qualification or they've moved up in the rankings. And that's just a consistent pressure on you and a stress on you. A David Goggins on social media. You push. Mm. You a Navy SEAL. You push. You know, consistency means go. And like when it gets harder, you double down. And that's always...
Lisa Raley says, push down harder on that rebounder.
One more.
Lift a heavier weight.
But I mean, this is something that is consistently presented to us all the time, that we're not good enough, that we must push harder, that we must break through, that in the pain lies the transformation. In that last few reps, is that's where the muscle burns and that's where you break through.
Yeah.
That is persistently, in a sinister way, presented to us with voiceovers on videos.
More.
Yes, that was that video that inspired you to do the challenge the one time. Do you remember?
Yeah.
But is it, it's coming from a place of lack or you.
So that's the thing.
So now that's that new series that's now playing. I know you haven't watched, you and I have watched it. You haven't watched it yet, hey Carly, The Adolescence.
I haven't.
That, this four-part mini-series.
Been too nervous.
And that was around that, not being good enough. It was the peer pressure. Wow. It was social media. It was being bullied through the technology to the point where this boy was dealing with so much adrenaline and so much anxiety and so much like, I'm not good enough, subliminally in his face, behind his back, to the point where he boiled over and he landed up killing a girl, a girl that he fancied, actually, so it was like, and this is where when we talk about what do we do to kind of make the stress dissipate, like how our youth are growing up in a time that is very crazy. Mm-hmm. Like the pressure on them, the subliminal like messaging all the time to be better, to be more beautiful, to work harder, to achieve, to succeed. I mean, it's coming from every single angle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to be living in these times. We've got a daughter who's 9 this year, and she'll be, in just a few years' time, she'll be in this era, this 11 to 13, where this whole adolescence movie, that was the age of the little boy.
So tough for them.
And, we've got to like really be careful with our kids, because there's more and more of them killing themselves, committing suicide, deciding that they're not good enough, they're not worthy of being here. So the stress is either lashed out on someone else in a bully format, in a hurting someone else format, or hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. And we need to do something about it, because like this is all stress, right? It's all a form of stress. It's all a form of anxiety, cortisol, getting to that point where you're going to tip and you're going to explode with anger and rage. But it comes from not being able to talk about your feelings, cope, not having healthy outlets to let these energies and these feelings go.
Totally.
A good communication channels with your peers or with psychologists or your parents, people that love you, trust you, and like open channel of communication. It's something that Bill and I do every day when I fetch her from school. It's about a 25-minute ride home, and we unpack the day, and she asks me about my day, but I'm more interested about her day. And like we talk about highs and lows, and there's often tears in the car. We talk about bullying, we talk about stressing factors, and then I give her tips about how she could have handled it better, or how we must incorporate the breath work that I've taught her.
Sweet.
And the other day we had a teacher parent meeting, and probably one of the proudest moments I've ever had as a mom, besides Steph was looking at the math and being like, yes, as long as she could do maths. And I was like, as long as she can cope with
masculine
stress.
Masculine versus feminine.
And for me, the teacher just said, sometimes she's in stressful situations. She is quite a mature little girl for her age. She's got bigger sisters. So she's kind of grown up with a lot of adults influence. She doesn't have like any youngsters in her space at all. We all talk business at the dinner table. So she's grown up a little bit fast, So she's a bit mature, and there are other girls and that maybe aren't at the same level. So she gets frustrated. So the teacher says, she just goes, and then she deals with the situation. So like
she regulates.
She just takes a nice deep breath. And I've taught her how to do this from a baby. I held her face and we breathe through it. And she's now taking it into everyday life. So when you're about to react, or you're about to respond, or you're about to retaliate or lash out, just whoa. Just take a deep breath and like reposition this in your brain. You know, is it so important, like perspective over like the pressure, like just reframe it because it's not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Don't react in a way you're going to regret later, you know? And having these little forms of communication with our children are just so important.
So important.
Where they can feel they can talk to you about things like bullies and stress and frustrations and, "Mom, I don't know, like, I don't know what I should have done in the situation, but she made me so mad."
Getting it out.
She's got to get it out. And I mean, I'm just talking about this because this, I've just finished watching the miniseries last weekend. It was so disturbing for me to think that this little boy had to deal with all of this, so much so he's spending the rest of his life pretty much in, well, according to the story, in juvie.
Okay.
Yeah, in juvie prison.
But you know this is,
because he couldn't handle his stress at the time. It's like, it's so sad. I actually feel like he's a victim of it. He actually isn't the perpetrator here. What is so sad is the fact that it had to get to that point where he had to lash out like that. But actually, there's a broken system here. That's more worrying.
Yeah.
But what was very important, and I think a lot of people can relate with this, is technology.
Yeah.
So, you know, people always ask me, you know, what are we going to do? Everything's becoming more technological, more connected. I mean, we've moved from a day where we struggle to be connected, and now we're in a world where we struggle to be disconnected. Mm-hmm. We actually have places where you can go to get disconnected.
And it happens so quickly. Yeah.
And it happens so quickly. And I think this is putting a lot of pressure on us. And I think what we see in the world is what's causing this is I mean, if you take a look at marriages, the amount of birth rates in the world is going down. Kids are being born.
Fertility is also being impacted by all of this. We can
marriages,
talk about that.
People are not getting married anymore. If you take a look at just populations in the world are declining.
Mm-hmm.
They're choosing not to have kids.
Not because there's no hope.
Yeah.
They can't see beyond because all they see is this glowing rectangle in their hands consistently.
Sure.
And I think what I tell people when I speak to people, and maybe this is my little flag that I'm waving here, the Stafford. Like, Stafford's not all that bad. But from a technological perspective, I always say, as much as it is about technology, it's actually more so about humanity now. Like, if you don't have that human connection with your partner, technology will fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
If you, at the dinner table, your kids will resonate. They will go to their phones, and the reason they're going to their phones is because you are lacking the human connection with them. Your partner and you go to dinner and the both of you on phones, there's a lack of human. So what technology requires us to do is to have more humanity.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to tap into that even more so than ever before.
So social cortisol resets.
Well, human.
That you're taking like the social side, the social media side of it, and you're having real face-to-face connections with other people where you're locking your phones. You see that you can get these little safes. That
I
as
have
people
a few
walk
patients,
in,
you have them.
And you put your phone in this little safe with a key, and the key goes away until 8 p.m.
It's
or whatever
timer.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think that is such a brilliant
so
thing.
Clever.
No phones at the dinner table. Maybe you have a dinner party, you invite friends. No one's allowed to like record anything on social media. Everyone has to be present. And you laugh, barely laugh, and you really feel what deep connection is about without recording, without checking your Twitter, whatever it is. So, I think that having some rules and boundaries at home, boundaries at school, boundaries at work, where everybody gets like the social media cortisol
detox.
Yeah, like, come on, guys. For the next half an hour, no one is allowed on their phone. Like, just for half an hour, put your phones in here. Let's just connect on a face-to-face, eye-to-eye level.
You know what's incredible is how South Africans are. I mean, South Africans, this episode is probably so relevant to all of us because, man, being South African is hard at the moment. It's very, very difficult. I mean, coming here today to the studio traffic lights are out.
I was scared driving by myself as a girl.
I mean, everything's not being fixed. Our country's in this weird place. And I think we all feel it. And I think just from a patient perspective, have you seen... What are you seeing when someone comes in? What's the breakthroughs? So I suffer from this cortisol low or this cortisol high. Mm-hmm. So I, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What's the breakthrough? So take me from a patient that suffered from it. And then what did they
came
do?
Through.
And then came through. And then what was the net result afterwards?
I'll come to that in a sec, but I just wanted to go back to what Lisa was saying as well with the teenagers. I have a lot of teenagers in my practice who are very close to my heart. I love them. I think, yeah, I love working with that as patients.
Right.
And I'm seeing high cortisol very often. Really? And then I'm seeing depletions of iron and vitamin D and all of these nutrients, which we'll get to, that are so important as currency to help your body fight the stress.
And that's linked to cortisol.
Yeah, because when your body's stressed, you're going to be utilizing more B vitamins, more magnesium, more iron, more vitamin D. It, stress is expensive to the body. So you can think about 100%. These nutrients as
where were you?
Money. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Because I know Bethany and Amber, I'm thinking like when they...
Yes.
The iron deficiency.
I did their bloods and we saw what was happening. Yeah. There's a number of things that could cause an iron deficiency, but a lot of these macronutrients are... used up more quickly to try and help your body recover from the stress, but the stress isn't going away, you're not getting better, so then you end up with these low levels of, especially we see vitamin D, magnesium, B vitamins are like the biggies. But I've got a good patient in mind who I saw last year, I think it was, 43-year-old woman in a very stressful, high pressure job, very, very, very work dominant and perfectionistic in her ways. So we tested a bunch of things, but I remember her cortisol was sitting in the 600s. So remember going back to what I said, healthy range is between about 280 and 350. Hers was 670 odd. And she said she's always feeling stressed. She wasn't eating during the day, maybe living on coffee and a chocolate and then binging at night, which is a pattern we see all the time, not exercising.
I just gave him
admission of guilt. Okay, so
I think you can get away with giving me glances. I'm going to just call it out.
I forgot who Carly is.
Eating during the day, binging at night, not being able to sleep, like all of these classic symptoms we've been chatting about, and not being able to lose the weight. Anyway, my approach generally is see the patient, listen, so I can really try and pick up what might be the underlying issue, do the bloods, explain the bloods to the patient. That's a big thing for me, is making sure that they understand what I'm testing, as opposed to doing, however many thousand rands worth of blood tests and the doctor just says all is fine, but they don't know what they tested, they don't know what they need to work on. So I do explain the bloods in detail. Then I devised a really proper eating plan for her. She is a rebounder as well. Well, she had a rebounder and she does rebound. So eating plan, exercise, guidance, and proper supplements. She came back to me in 2 months. That cortisol had come down from the 600s into the low 300s, into the norm. And she said work hasn't changed, the stress hasn't changed, but she's just sailing through it. She's just coping.
So what did she change?
She followed my eating plan to a T.
So it was the nutrition side.
Nutrition was huge. She took the supplements I prescribed, like diligently. She started exercising more. She wasn't skipping meals during the day, so she was actually making time to pack a lunchbox. She cut her caffeine down to, I think it was one cup a day after breakfast. She was prioritizing her sleep routine, so she was going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time, so that circadian rhythm was regulated. Eating protein at each meal, eating enough vegetables, cooking, not getting takeaways. Her sugar cravings went away, because that's another big sign actually of dysregulated cortisol, is people feel reliant on caffeine and sugar. It's like they can't get through the day without white carbs, sugar, and caffeine. When there's that addiction or that like unmanageable craving, it can be a sign that the body's out of balance in terms of cortisol. But it was amazing. She was a completely different person. And of course, the inflammation had come down. The weight had come down. I think she lost 6.5-7 kilos in those 2 months after not being able to lose at all. She also had a lot of menstrual irregularities. So period going missing or being scanty or very heavy bleeding, then very light bleeding. I don't know if that's appropriate for this podcast, but we're here. So
Steph just gave you the blankest important look ever. Like, are you really talking about this?
No.
He's trying not to make eye contact with you.
There's such a big connection between our sex hormones and the adrenal hormones. So blood sugar is the foundation number one, followed by this cortisol and DHEA story that we've been talking about. Then comes your thyroid, and then comes your sex hormones.
Okay, wait, let's start. I like that.
Okay,
I like
it's like a little pyramid.
And that's like the architecture of something.
Yes.
So the base of the architecture is
blood sugar.
Blood sugar.
So glucose, insulin.
So regulate having the ability to your body to regulate, and that's where diabetes and all mm-hmm. that stuff lives, in that band.
Pre-diabetes, insulin resistance, the highs and the lows. So we're wanting a more stable balance of the blood sugar. Okay,
so we've got to focus on diet first. So that's what Carly said. The first thing she changed was the diet, making sure there was protein at every meal,
high fiber,
and good quality fats at every meal to keep the energy regular throughout, without peaks and troughs in your in the energy. So number one was like fix the diet.
Well, let's stick at that level. So it's just the blood sugar level. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you said the cortisol level.
Adrenals, yeah. Adrenals. So looking after them. And I think we didn't do too much in terms of that. I think it was just getting the sleep schedule right, though, Carly.
Yeah. You've got to sleep like it's your job.
Literally.
Like, honestly. You've got to look at your sleep hygiene, wind down routine, go to bed at more like the 9 o'clock, have the herbal tea, dim the lights, get off the phones, read, put on the little sleep spec glasses to take out the blue lights if you do want to watch a little bit of something, and rather get up earlier and start your day that way. But that is going to do wonders for cortisol.
Yeah.
Okay, so
adrenals.
Blood sugar.
Yeah.
Adrenals.
I did use adaptogens with her as well. Okay. I can't remember exactly which one I used, but I used it specifically for her. I think it was ashwagandha at the
time. Because we hadn't launched Plenty yet.
Yes.
And then what else did I do on that layer?
Deep breathing. And then the third layer is the thyroid. So thyroid sits in your neck area, and that is the master controller of your metabolism. So we see a lot of Hashimoto's, which is the leading cause of
that.
It's an autoimmune disease, but it's the leading cause of hypothyroidism. And I often see, even if a patient is on medication or they're taking the euthyrox or whatever thyroid meds, if there's this underlying imbalanced adrenal dysfunction, it pulls the thyroid down. It's also compensatory. It's an adaptation of the body to say, okay, I need to slow down, I need to chill, I need to conserve energy, let's pull the thyroid down. So it might even be subclinical, to the point where it's not diagnosed as a thyroid disorder, but remember, things happen on a spectrum. It's not your thyroid's perfect or it's terrible. There's a spectrum there. So thyroid might become a little bit tired and sluggish. And then the top is sex hormones, which is something I'm like super interested in at the moment from a fertility perspective, is understanding the female sex hormones, the male sex hormones and their patterning. But this cortisol dysregulation, think about it primitively, when we're in this fight or flight chronically, does the body want to
produce?
Have a baby? Does it want to?
The body prevents you.
Is it safe to hold a baby?
As a woman, to house a baby when you don't have any food?
Not like that.
Or there's predators all around you. You don't have a home, space. The worst thing you could possibly do is bring a new life that's noisy and needs food and needs breast milk when
it's
there's no food.
More stress.
So your body, whenever you're stressed out, your body is going to kind of like stop you from falling pregnant, because it associates it with prehistoric days.
Reproductions are non-essential.
It's a non-essential, yeah. Why would I make you fall pregnant now when you are so stressed? And the only reason you could be stressed is if you're in a dangerous situation or you don't have food.
Carly, having sex, does that reduce your
cortisol
levels?
I'm not a sexologist. I think yes. Yeah,
having
it
a lot
releases.
Of sex, does it reduce your cortisol?
I don't know how
more?
Much. I haven't looked into the study. Oh my gosh, this is being podcasted.
Okay?
Yeah, but it does. It releases oxytocin, and oxytocin is the love hormone.
Right?
No, it's that oxytocin.
Is basically your love hormone. It's your bonding hormone, and that does really help balance the negative effects of cortisol. It gives you a little bit more resilience. So yes, it would. But again, in that sense, in terms of if we're thinking about
ladies,
libido,
don't turn off the podcast now.
Yeah. If we're thinking about libido, when there is that dysregulation from a stress perspective, it just falls completely. So there isn't that drive to reproduce, because it's non-essential. So the gut shuts off, reproduction shuts off. Those are the two.
You're trying to survive, not thrive.
Yeah.
So
you're trying to run away
from the non-essentials. Go out the window.
I'm going to be dead quiet now.
Okay, fine. you guys are here.
just have more sex and save the world.
But in a practical way, like, because now you said you did some intervention with this lady and she had such amazing results. You know, a lot of people are in very stressful situations and they need to be able to take small, like have bite-sized changes in their lives. So having these little like moments in the day where there's no social media, where you have pause breaks, you know, to just take some deep breaths or take your shoes off and just walk in the garden, you know, for 5 minutes and whatever. Listen to your favorite song, get on a rebound and bounce it out. Little pause breaks throughout the course of the
day.
You see, now I need a break.
Throughout the course of the day.
Yes. It's like really, really important at reducing that like constant adrenaline, go.
Constantly being switched on.
Yes, yeah. Like being constantly wired throughout the course of the day. Those little 2 minute to 5 minute breaks are absolutely critical. Mm. Just to have a glass of water, get up, do 10 squats, bounce on your rebounder, don't go to TikTok and like try and de-stress on a social platform for 5 minutes.
So many people do that. Phone. I do that sometimes as well. It's like after I've finished with a very, very stressful, like just demanding patient, I'll go on my phone and I'll scroll to like almost try and then I'm like, nope, stop it. Sometimes it's like a dissociation thing. I think it's like, okay, let me just distract myself, just calm the brain down, but it's actually adding to the problem because you just... you know, absorbing more information and the brain is getting more panicked and more stressed.
You know, we're doing
more
that
stimulation,
all the
more
time.
Stimulation. And so we say to our team and members at the studio, we're like, okay, you know, you guys have been sitting here for 90 minutes or 2 hours because they're all like cranking on their laptops and da 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 da. Go to the studio, put on the music, like a really funky song that you guys love, and just go and lymphocyte for 3 minutes. And every time they're like, I feel so much better. Afterwards, you'll probably go to the bathroom, you'll drink a glass of water, sit back at your desk, and you're like energized again for another hour.
So important.
But we just sit and we sit and we sit, and our backs start hunching over like this. You stop breathing properly, you stop blinking properly. You know, you just don't move for hours and hours on end. So we've got to learn to take these 3 minute pause rituals throughout the course of the day to just get some sun. Do some deep breathing, bounce, do whatever. Just
go
like
sit in the garden and just listen to the birds for a bit. Yeah.
Absolutely no stimulus. And those little breaks, I think, really, that's something quite easy that people can start to integrate into their day.
Super
just
helpful.
To take the edge off a lot.
Just a quick question, for both of you. And what's the biggest myth associated with cortisol that you've seen? Like how do people like misunderstand it or misdiagnose it?
I don't know, but cortisol or stress in general? Because, I mean, I don't know if there's any myth about cortisol, but I think stress.
Where people think it's,
I think I know with the stress as well. I think people associate stress with only being mental or emotional. So they only see it from like the neck up, basically. So it's like, if I'm not anxious, if I'm not depressed, I'm fine, I'm coping, I'm good. But they forget about like the neck down. So they forget about the physical signs of stress. And they forget that stress isn't just emotional or mental, that it's a physiological change in the body. So all of that heart rate, blood sugar, blood pressure stuff I was talking about has physical ramifications on the body. So gut issues or muscle tension or skin breakouts or eczema or joint pain, those are all signs of stress.
But they're
too.
Also side effects from stress, right? The
yes.
fact that you actually are
signs
stressed.
Of stress.
So now in order to not get stressed in the first place, I do feel like we need to reframe stress from like pressure. Like a pressure cooker to perspective. And this is where I really think that I have learned to master stress, because sometimes people, I'm not mastered because I'm still very much learning, but definitely it's helped me. So reframing it in my mind all the time that I'm busy, I'm not stressed. And also I get to do this. I don't have to do this.
Yeah,
you
and I have this discussion
constantly
often.
Like, you know, I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do this.
By the way,
I have to
remind you of this often.
You get to do this. Yeah. You get to do this. You get to do what you love. You get to get on a rebound and teach people. You get to follow your passion. You get to help people for a living. You get to move your body in a beautiful way. You get to go on holiday. You get to work hard.
It's amazing.
You know what I mean? So I think the minute you say it, it turns everything from this like this dread
doom
into
and gloom.
This gratitude, the sense of gratitude the whole time. Like, I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I get to do this. I'm lucky I get to go to the studio now and move my body. You know how many people would kill to do that? They don't have legs or they don't have their health, or you know what I mean? So I think reframing it
so
from pressure goes a long way for what it does to your mental health. And it just reframes in your brain from I'm so stressed, I have to, actually, I'm just busy and I get to do all this stuff. Just that reframing in your mind changes your perspective of stress, and it turns it more into a busyness that you are grateful for and you should be grateful for. And taking that, shifting that mindset, is number one.
Yeah.
Like, guys, like, when was the last time you did a gratitude list? Like, when was the last time you looked at it and reframed it in your mind? You're lucky
And your body listens to half the things you do.
Your mind is the most powerful tool, you know, like everything you're thinking about, you're feeling in some way, it's having a ramification on your body. On every cell in your body is feeling it, it's storing it, it's holding on to it, it has a memory, and it is going to have a side effect. So if you can control your brain, then you can control your stress a lot of the time, unless it is something incredibly traumatic, like, you know, something happens to you, a car accident or a child dies, or those things are chronic, right? Absolutely. But the day-to-day stresses, I think that a lot of us just need to reframe our brains. I think that's
probably the most important thing of the episode.
You know? I can't believe you just said that. No, babe.
Like, I hope you are just, where's the mirror in this place? Oh, my hats. And oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Lisa, I think that is, yeah, it's incredible and so, so, so important to realize that the thoughts that go on in your head and the way that you speak to yourself, your body responds appropriately. And the body doesn't know the difference between real stress and perceived stress. So if you constantly saying, oh, I'm so stressed, going on and on and on in a negative spiral, the body's going to secrete cortisol, secrete adrenaline, because it doesn't understand. And
you might as well be running away from a massive leopard, honestly.
100%. Yeah.
You know.
My take is just execute. I always tell Lisa, stop. Stop the stress.
Action.
Action. Mm. What's the next step? Then the next step. Then the next step. Because that's, else you just go sit in a corner and you drown in your stress. And you can't. That your way out is to just take that next step and then the next step and to execute. For me, execution.
They say action is the antidote to anxiety, which I think is so true. If you're feeling stuck and paralyzed and in that freeze mode, go do something.
Go
clean a cupboard. Go do something, and then that momentum starts building and starts.
I have one more point. It's probably my last point because I think we're hitting 2 hours or just over. Oh, my hat!
Wow, that went quick.
I just want to talk about the importance of protecting your energy. So I spoke about the big bubble, and putting yourself in this bubble, because I think a lot of the time you are going to be surrounded by people that are negative and that people that are very wired and people that are very stressed and that don't penetrate your bubble with good intent either. You know, there are these people in your lives. And I think as I've become a little bit older, and I mean, Carly, you're still a spring chicken, and you're going to, I think maybe you've already learned it because you're very wise and you're very sort of a mature soul, you know.
But I call them energy vampires.
Yes. Yeah. I just feel like I've become a real snob with my time. And like, I won't spend time with people that rob me from joy or make me feel like what I'm doing is weird. Like, you work so hard, or like, how do you do it? And you do ever chill? And people that make me doubt my life choices, people that make me don't feel good about myself, people that have bad habits, okay, in their lives, like unhealthy habits that I don't really want to be part of. But generally, it's people that make me feel not good enough or inferior, or that I'm doing something wrong, or my relationship's wrong, or I'm raising my child wrong, or I'm working too hard, or I'm sacrificing too much, or, you know, I really have become incredibly snobbish about my time and who I spend my time with, and protecting my energy and the people that I associate with. So from staff members, what I find is that if we do get somebody that joins our company, they don't last if they are not made of the same, cut from the same cloth. You know what I mean? We don't even have to fire them, they leave. And it's because they don't resonate on our level. And I certainly don't tolerate the nonsense. You know what I mean? And I don't even have to say it. I just don't make time for them. I don't even have the energy to hear them out because it's nonsense. So I've become a little bit less tolerant of people's drama and gossip and negativity and people that are draining of my power and my energy, so much so that I feel like so weakened and so deflated after being with them. Like, when you're with people, you should be around your tribe, people that make you feel good
and energized and excited and happy
and just positive, and like, it's gonna be okay, things happen, and like, just kind of like, just make you feel better about everything. If you are with people, if you surround yourself with people that don't make you feel like that, then you need a new circle, you need a new tribe.
Absolutely.
You need new people. And I have really been very hard about that in the last 3 to 5 years. Like, I have lost a lot of friends. I've lost some clients. I've lost some staff because I literally don't make time and space for it. I've become such an energy snob. I'm protective of my soul, my space, what comes inside, and not without, you know, caring about anybody else. Like, I'm not going to not listen to you. I'm going to listen once or twice. I'm going to try and help. I'm going to do the things that I've been taught to do, and I loved helping others. But if you're not going to listen, if you're not going to take my advice, if you're not going to do the hard work, if you're not going to make the changes and change the habits and try and not be a victim but a victor, because we all have stuff that's happened to us. If I can't help you, just, you need to leave my space, because you're actually just toxic to me. Mm-hmm. I can't deal with it. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? I've tried and I failed. I have not succeeded. So I'm sorry. And there'll be many people that'll come toxic into my space, and through changes, through listening, through building a beautiful community of like-minded people around them, they start to change and they get better. Mm-hmm. And those people I will bring closer to me, because they've showed me that they can do the work, that they are willing to make an effort, that they can change. They started a much circle toxic, but they didn't stay there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I need to see effort. I need to see that somebody is willing to meet me halfway, and that there's improvements. 100%. But if you're not going to make improvements over a period of time, I'm sorry, but like I no longer have time and space for you. And I think there's a lot of people out there that associate themselves with friendship circles, and even partners and loved ones, and that are really toxic, even family members that mm-hmm. don't make them feel good. You know what? Try and protect yourself, and only see them when you absolutely have to. Those friendship circles, you need to abandon ship. You need to do the hard thing, and you need to cut ties and let those people go. And if you're in a relationship that where your partner doesn't make you a better version of yourself, or want to be a better version of yourself, you need to make some hard choices, and you need to get the hell out of Dodge, because like that is going to stress you out. Subliminally, it is going to stress you to mm-hmm. the point where you're like, you know, you don't know why you're so anxious all the time. You're doubting yourself. You feel anxiety. That's something that people don't talk about, is it's like underlying this feeling of not good enough. I'm not feeling happy. I don't feel safe. They don't connect with me on the same level. They don't know, they don't want what's best for me. You know what I mean? They actually want to harm me in some way, or pull me down to their level because they're jealous or whatever it is. There could be many reasons behind these things. But really what I'm trying to say is like be careful of the things that are causing you stress, that it's a feeling. You know, don't ignore your guts and your feeling when you're like, I don't feel good right now. This person doesn't make me feel good every time they're around me. It's causing stress in your body. And if you spend a lot of time around these toxic people, you are going to become toxic, because you're not going to be a happy person. You're going to feel stressed all the time. So I think it's a part of fawn, you know, like you're not worthy of like leaving the circle. You've got to stay there, please everybody. Maybe it's me. You know, like if I leave the circle, this friendship group, then what are people going to think about me? I don't want to upset the apple cart. I don't want to upset Sally and Joe and Penelope and Jessica, you know, but you're not even valuing your own feelings. So really, in closing from my side, I just want to say, like, sometimes in life you have to do a reboot. You have to do a declutter. You have to do a spring clean.
A detox of people, toxic people,
toxic energies. Get rid of the things that are harming you, that are creating a lot of stress in your life. As hard as those decisions may be, you've got to start the process of cleaning your life out. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that you and I had a discussion around is the more, and I'm using this word again, the more sinister derivative of that association of people that feed off you being low.
Your demise in some way.
That's not being perfect.
Or you being sad.
They love the fact that you're down.
Yes.
And they love to...
makes them feel better.
They can
about
connect,
their own lives, right?
They can connect with
your pain and your
stress, because it validates something in them in some way or form, and they keep you there with them, and they coagulate around that with you. And you think that's a friendship, and you think that person's
close. It's called traumatic bonding.
And the person comes together. And I think that is something where people and your surroundings can keep you in those stressful down. You're not breaking out. You're not overcoming. You're not getting there.
And it's never too late to start again and, you know, make new friends and meet new people. And the way you do that is to try new things, get out there, try stuff you've never done before, associate yourself with a new circle of friends and see how that makes you feel. But it is a hard thing. It's very hard, especially if there's money involved or family involved or, you know, relationships, marriage, children. These things are not easy to get out of. A lot of these things take huge bravery and time, commitment, strategy. You know, it's not easy. But don't kind of like discount and dis-ease, like unease when people around you are making you feel uneasy. don't discount that feeling in the pit of your stomach that something feels off, something doesn't feel right. And if you have that every day, all day, and then for weeks and months and years at a time, just imagine what that's doing to you on a cellular level.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to get out of there. Yeah. You've got to have boundaries.
Change your environment.
You've got to put those boundaries in place. You've got to change environment, change your friendship circles. You've got to make some change. Mm. Yeah.
Carly, closing. Let's hear some closing thoughts from you.
Sure. Amazing podcast, guys. Incredible. I hope it inspired people to think more about cortisol and the more far-reaching consequences of it, that it's not just how you respond to stress. It's so much more than that. And to not feel guilty, to rest and to switch off and to slow down. I think that's my closing message, because, you don't have to be a robot on all the time. Go.
Yeah, just I'll close and I'll almost.
The next time you're having a chillax, babe, you can just say, babe, just leave me. I'm just reducing my cortisol levels.
Cortisol mode. But I just, as a man, when I listen to these things and I get exposed in Lisa's business to a lot of what women go through and what they deal with, and I think for me in closing, I think there's a lot of men out there that don't tap into vulnerability, that tap into actually being weak is okay. Disconnecting. You don't have to win every fight.
It's not weak. Resting. It's not about being weak. It's just about
softening.
Yes. Softening, resting.
So it's that feminine, it's masculine balance. Yeah. I've been reading so much about it. It's so interesting.
Pausing, breathing, reconnecting, reframing.
Going with the flow.
So as men, these are things that we are starting to learn now.
Amazing.
More and more when we like it, and it's finding strength in femininity, because I do think we're all male female in some way or form, and it's tapping into that aspect of being more emotional, being more vulnerable, having a greater emotional maturity and insight in circumstances, etc. That there's, because we have these, and I'm going to say his name because I despise the person, I'm going to say it, Andrew Tate.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not an Andrew Tate fan because I have daughters and I can see both sides. And I just think this toxic masculinity, this hardness, this is not
rigidity.
And I think that's a very stressful way for
domineering.
A man to be.
Totally.
But it's a very stressful way for a man to be. And I think a lot of men suffer. And I know the clients that come to Lisa's door, the men, when I watch them, I think it's because of so many years of pent up toxic masculinity and a frame that we've lived that we don't have to live.
No.
We don't have to be that way.
We don't have to always perform, always be on, always be in control, always be in charge, always have it perfect, always have an answer.
Yeah.
It's actually flipping exhausting.
Yeah,
it is exhausting for you, but it's also exhausting for everyone around.
No, but let me say, I'm getting
for
women.
Like, when we see men like that, we're like, oh my gosh.
Okay.
It's off putting.
Yeah.
I think men think that we look at it as like, wow, he's so strong.
Attractive.
He's such a man.
Yeah.
And we look at him and we want to run a mile, because like, he doesn't have any softness in him. It's like he's way too strong.
Too analytical, too logic.
Oh my gosh, guys. If you want to get a wife or girlfriend or whatever, I hope you listen to this part of the podcast, because soften up.
So that's, so just again, in closing, my part of closing.
Do you want to say that? Soften up. I don't think it'll hit the same.
It won't come
you
out
say
of his
soften
mouth,
up.
I don't think.
But I think I think men are suffering a lot from this cortisol thing that I've learned here today. I'm not an expert, but I know a lot of men are suffering from it. And I think they're suffering from it because of living a stereotypical life. I think they are in relationships and they are causing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of men cause things in marriages and relationships because they don't understand this. So giving your wife the space, giving your partner the freedom, I think there's a lot of that doesn't
happen. And yourself the freedom. To not always be on and always have it perfect.
And I think a lot of men deal with this issue in a blunt, traumatic manner.
Mm.
They don't deal with it in the way that a woman would.
Mm.
And they don't want to recognize this, because high cortisol levels, so it almost, when I look at it from a masculine perspective, feels weak.
Mm.
It feels like you're weak. You're nothing. You're not capable.
Like, you should be able to beat that.
You should be able to beat that. And I think that's and your body doesn't work that way.
Mm-mm.
Right? And that's what I'm hearing today. That
your body's
matter.
Smarter than you, actually.
Exactly.
I think that's really important.
So so just for men out there, I think tap into this, listen to this, go do the test, because I do think there's a pandemic in the world right now of men that suffer from this. Mm. I would argue even more so than women, but it's silent.
even with women, I think we like live in a male dominated society, right? And like a masculine driven society, like that rigidity and that structure, work Monday to Friday, these hours set. I think, yeah, a lot of women struggle to tap into that soft, feminine, vulnerable energy too, because they've had to, exactly like you say, man adapt up. And survive and yeah, think two steps ahead. And so that I think women are imbalanced a lot too.
Yeah. And just as South Africans, I think, you know, this topic is so important because I do think as a society, as a nation, as South Africans, we
are wired.
We
are so wired.
Tired,
so
but stressed. Wired.
Yeah.
We are so, so stressed and we need to watch out. I mean, we've just come through this massive COVID thing and now we're in this terrestrial challenge thing that we are in. I promised myself that I wasn't going to say Bitcoin once on this podcast.
No, why did you end it?
Oh, you almost did it, babe.
Yeah, don't take it lightly. I think that's really important.
Okay, but talking about that, let's actually just talk about it. Because our next podcast, because yes, we want to do trauma and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling everybody, because now I'm putting it out there, because now you have to do it.
What?
Our next podcast is going to be around, babe.
Money.
About money.
Financial.
And about financial stress, financial wealth.
So clever.
Empowering people around, you know, a little bit of the AI and about crypto and about Bitcoin and stuff like that. Because I think a huge reason why people are stressed is financial.
It's money.
So if you can like help a lot on that side of things and empower people to understand things that really scare them, like this whole crypto world, I think that you're doing like is humanity, society, a huge service.
100%.
So come on, like this financial stress is real, especially in SA.
And you know,
right
we avoid it. Eh? We don't, like, even on this podcast right now, we spoke about everything.
But we didn't talk about financial stress. We didn't. So let's make that, because it is a whole nother talk, and we are over 2 hours. Let's make that our commitment, that our next podcast is going to be around financial freedom, understanding crypto. Yeah. Yes.
Because the world, the reason, and I'll just to preface that podcast, and this is going to be the preface. The reason the world is so stressed, the reason suicide rates are so high, the reason antidepressants are so prescribed, the reason we have psychological, like, people that have no hope, Gen Zs look at the world and they just can't see the into next week, is because our money is broken.
Okay.
The inflation, the way money works, I always tell people this, your groceries are not getting more expensive, your money is getting weaker.
Okay, and now that is a statement, babe, that blows everyone's mind. Can you just stop there now, please, and unpack that? And the next podcast we do, we need to do a vlogcast, because what you're going to draw on your little whiteboard is going to be really important. So you're going to show us with all your cute little diagrams of like how money works and stuff, and like the way of the future and where it's all going. That needs to be visual. Okay, so we're going to do our first vlogcast.
People just don't know where, like, why
stop
is our
it.
Money
stop
in
stop talking about it now.
Why is our money? No, okay, the stress.
Yes, the stress. Okay, it's stressful. Let's understand it. Let's take that stress away so everyone gets to understand that. Like you understand it, or at least we can try.
Okay.
And empower people on their, you know, their financial freedom path. Let's just end there.
So that's
the
next topic, financial wellness.
Love financial that. Wellness.
So
let's
do
it.
Why didn't you think about this earlier?
Okay, I don't know. So you can see who's the brain.
You will be the dummies in that next podcast.
Yes, we can be the dummies.
We can be the dummies for once, please.
Carly, as usual. Amazing.
Thanks, guys.
Amazing. I just, the things that you do, the both of you, and I'll just say this, the two human beings together, the amount of lives you guys change, and like literally tangibly, I see it in Lisa's business. I see it what you do. And I see people with no hope and they come out the other side and they're different human beings. I see marriages that are broken. And then because of what you guys do, men come to me in the store, wherever I'm, and go, thank you. You saved my wife. You know, we've had that
in
a couple
marriage,
of times.
Yeah.
You saved my marriage. And like, I got my wife. Like, the other day I was in the store in Nicolway, and guy came out and he just says, you know what? When my wife comes in here, I don't care what she spends. Because I got my wife back. I've got that girl that I met when she was 17.
It's amazing.
And they're in their 50s. He says, she's back. The energy levels are back. You know, our sex life is back. She wants to go do things. She wants to travel the world. Before, she was manic depressant. She was sitting in the corner. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was thinking, I can't do this. I'm going to leave her. And now we're both doing it. We're both bouncing. We both did our DNA. We did the consultation with this, and their lives are changed. And this is what this is all about. And this is why this is free. sponsor-free.
Yeah.
This is why we're doing it the way we're doing it. So we empower people. So yeah, it's a privilege to be with both of you.
Thanks,
you too.
Thanks for being the mediator, yeah. facilitator, MC, pretty face, dummy.
The Bitcoiner.
We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Okay. Dorit, next time it's your opportunity to flex.
To shine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Financial wellness.
Yeah, let's do
one.
It. Let's Woohoo! Do it.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.